Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, good morning. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by M&A Moving and Hauling, serving all of Central Iowa for your moving needs. Call 515-490-2640. And they'll send you a couple of guys. Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers. And Brian...
Hey, I've got a complaint.
You have a complaint.
I've got a complaint.
What a great way to start off our week.
Well, look, I'm driving down Story Street in the beautiful town of Boone, Iowa, and I'm seeing the Christmas decorations up. And then, you know, I'm going back and forth on the radio stations on my FM dial. Boom, I hit 104, and guess what happens? Christmas music.
Oh.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Man.
I have not even wrapped my brain around the concept of summer being over yet. This is just
no
too, reality
has hit brutally this week, hasn't
well,
it?
Well, yeah, Monday people are out mowing their lawn. Tuesday, there's I get up in the Tuesday morning and there's snow on the ground. I'm sorry.
Or as I like to call it, white fluffy crap. But
yeah, look, I'm protesting officially. I'm not going to participate in winter this early. I'm not going to participate in Christmas this early.
You're just being a Grinch.
Humbug.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't like the, hey, let's have 6 months of Christmas music. Yay! No, I like it like the week of Christmas, and then I want it to be done.
And the temperatures to go up.
And I don't know why some people continue to play Christmas music for the week after. No. Shifting gears.
They're coming
to
down.
New Year's Day. Anyway, I'm with you. I totally with you, Sue.
Can I complain about something else?
Well, hey, why not? Go ahead.
Look, I got a fleet of hacks, okay? I've got the moving truck, and I've got all these other vehicles that we drive all over creation.
I thought you were talking about, like, your workers there for a second. You got hacks working for you? What?
No. You're thinking political again, okay?
I'm sorry.
Think automotive hacks. That's me.
Gotcha. Okay.
You can just call me Mr. Check Engine Light, because my entire fleet, all the check engine lights are on, okay? All of my vehicles are now over 200,000. I got one that's almost at 350. My 99 Honda Civic, almost at 350. The moving truck is pushing 300,000. I know I should go out and buy a new car. I don't want to do it. I probably should replace two or three of these things. I can't bring myself to do it. And so there's one of them in the shop all the time.
Yeah.
Taking my take-home pay. So
the mechanics love you.
They do. So what's going on with you?
Well,
surely you can think of something to protest or complain about.
I'm good. I'm gonna end on a high note our banter time here, because it's all good. I'm doing the No Shave November thing. We'll have to get a picture to put up on Facebook. I'm following Spurgeon's admonition to grow my manliness out. So
I've had a beard for a long time, and nobody accused me of that having anything to do with my manliness.
Anyway, we have a special guest on the line. He's probably thinking, what the heck are these guys talking about? But he's been on our show once before, and he spoke at our Caffeinated Thoughts briefing. We have Steve Lonigan, the Director of Monetary Policy at American Principles in Action, also running Fix the Dollar Project, and he's currently in an airport, so if you hear background noise, that's what that is. Steve, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
We are honored to have you, sir.
Shane, Brian, it's good to be with you. I am in the Westchester County Airport in beautiful White Plains, New York, preparing to fly to South Carolina for a Fix the Dollar lecture tour like we did out in Iowa. But I do have a question for Brian. What constitutes a hack? What's the actual definition? Because it's kind of cool, actually.
It's one of those deals where you can identify one when you see one, but they're very difficult to define. High mileage, high maintenance, The occasional the occasional rust spot. In my case, some of my vehicles are a series of rust spots flying in formation.
I can empathize with that, Brian. I ran my own cabinet manufacturing business for 25 years, and I ran vehicles to over 300,000 miles. But you can get 300,000 miles on those Cummins diesel engines before you rebuild them. But so
that's right.
I know where you're coming from. Yeah, exactly.
You feel my pain.
That's the business world. People like you who are running real business are the real backbone of this economy. And the reason I think I'm on the show with you guys today is talk about a real threat to our economy, and that's coming out of the Federal Reserve System. Because today, you know, the Federal Reserve System is the entity charged with the providing that we have sound, hard money, that we know the value of our money when we exchange with one another, when we trade with one another, that we're trading in something we can trust and believe in. You know, that little piece of paper in your pocket, which it says, in God we trust.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's about all. That's who we have to trust in when it comes to American money, because there's nothing behind our money but our trust. Today, the Federal Reserve Chairwoman, the head of the Federal Reserve Bank, the organization charged with responsibility to maintaining the value of money, for the first time in this entity's 101-year history, is going to have a meeting with political special interest groups. Janet Yellen agreed to meet with groups which are pure derivatives of the Acorn movement, people who were protesting in August outside of their annual Jackson Hole Federal Reserve Summit symposium.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a bunch of stragglers outside protesting, and she agreed to meet with them today to share their concerns and get their insight into what they think our monetary policy should look like. Now, this is led...
Which I'm sure they're full of great ideas, right?
Well, this is led by a group out of Brooklyn, New York.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm sure it'll give great comfort to your farmers and people in the rural areas of Iowa. And I know this special interest group out of Brooklyn, New York, is coming to meet today with Janet Yellen, as well as what's called union leaders and representatives of the religious sector. That's very vague. But here's the fact, is that this Madam Yellen has agreed to meet with far-left liberal extremists, political organizations who have a very political agenda. You can go to the website for the Center for Popular Democracy, and you can see what they're about. They use terms like community organizers. They engage in influencing elections. They actually say that. And it's a very liberal group.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who this, for the first time ever, she's going to meet with and talk about what they think our monetary policy should look like to close the income gap and to create income equality, to basically manipulate a social agenda using our money. Want something backed by gold, want something, sorry, that the woman doing the announcements at the airport is not cooperating with
me. I know, they're being very rude. You need to tell them, stop, and I'm doing a radio interview.
Come on. Unbelievable.
So, look, I'm
in the middle of this thing about Federalists, but to me this is shocking and should be shocking and concerning to every American.
I totally agree with that. It's kind of appalling, but she's actually kind of taken steps to being proving herself to be a hyper-partisan Fed chair before this, right?
Yes, she did. In fact, she back in July or so, she had a press conference in Chicago in which she put on a welder's mask, went into a factory to look like a worker, and basically doing a press stunt as if she was a candidate for office. And by the way, she does not look good in a welder's mask.
I can imagine.
I don't know, maybe she looks better with it.
I don't know what I'm going to expect next. Maybe we should have Kim Kardashian as the Federal Reserve Chairman doing publicity stunts. But while she was there, she talked about meeting with three working families, two of whom the men she met with were convicted felons. So this is what this woman thinks represents working families.
Great. Well, she's recently weighed in on a speech. She discussed income inequality. And then she's also
she weighed in on a speech on October 17th in Boston, where she talked about our education system, that we rely too much on local education, that it's antiquated. In mm-hmm. other words, she's pushing for more federal involvement, Common Core.
Sure.
These are big Common Core.
Or federal funding, anyway.
And she talks down her nose to, you know, people who believe in local education. She talked about the inheritance tax program. She talked about the need to how to create jobs. You know, it's not the Federal Reserve System's business to create jobs.
No.
Brian creates jobs when he grows his business. Businesses create jobs, not the government, certainly not the Fed. So this is becoming disturbing on many levels, but more than that, it's extremely dangerous for sound money.
Steve, I can remember, it hasn't been that long ago, I think Alan Greenspan made a comment about the government spending. I think he just made a rather obtuse comment about making sure that the federal government watches its spending. And I remember in particular, there were some Democratic folks in Congress that were not a bit happy with that, you know, saying, well, that's not his role. He should tend to his knitting. Where are those people now that it appears we've got a possibility of a Fed chair that's going to be knee-deep in trying to develop some sort of social policy instead of a fiscal one?
That's a good question, Shane, because the Federal Reserve now has becoming far more politically active, far more of an activist organization, and where is Congress? But we do have a new Congress coming in January. And I am very hopeful that a Republican Congress, as well as Democrats, will call for more accountability and more rules on how the Fed operates. But that's to be seen, because the Federal Reserve is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. Both sides are afraid of it because they control the money supply. So it's a huge political challenge to get these people to engage. That's going to have to come up from the grassroots. People on the ground are going to have to call their congressmen, call their senators, demand accountability, demand an end to the radical activism. And it is radical activism cutting out of the Federal Reserve chairman. I mean, this is unheard of. And it actually is empowering, you know, these left-wing groups. I mean,
you
go to the website of these guys, they're all pumped up. They're going to meet. They're going to work on monetary. They're going to work on monetary policy? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're toast if this keeps going.
Oh, this is a...
Here's their monetary policy. We take your money and we redistribute it to our allies. Or we print money out of nowhere and we give it away to our allies. That's their monetary policy.
Oh, man. Well, hey, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and you're listening to Shane Vanner, Brian Myers, and we have Steve Lonergan on the line with us. Steve, you recently made a statement regarding the November jobs report. Are you encouraged, discouraged? Well, do you think we're on track? Maybe you don't need to say anything else.
He just sighed. That's
now,
really.
here's the thing, is that at the foundation of everything, you can be optimistic about the private sector and about the private sector's ability to adapt and punch through the horrific challenges that are being thrown up by the government. The thing that's driving the American economy today is the oil coming out of the Beacon regions of North South Dakota, the fact that we're pushing out, you know, natural gas through fracking, that we've increased our fuel supply, that we are not relying on the Middle East. That's coming out of private sector, you know, innovation and drive. And it's all the creativity of companies like Apple, right, and others that are growing new products and new inventions that are keeping our country prosperous and afloat. The government's in the way every step of the way, whether it's crushing capital from out of creation out of Wall Street, undermining the value of money for middle-class wage earners. So the bright spot out there is that the private sector continues in this country to be the best in the world. That's it. But the big problem that I have is what's happening to working families. The fact that the income gap is widening and that wages are stagnant, the cost of living is going up faster than wages are going up, and that's not because of capitalism. It's not because of the failures of our free market economy.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of the radical policies of the Federal Reserve System that's destroying the value of the American dollar. You know, I'm holding...
You're not saying the answer... I mean, I kept on hearing from politicians the answer is raising minimum wage. You disagree?
No. Well, I disagree 100%. In fact, if I could wave a magic wand, I would end the minimum wage, period.
Oh, you heartless man, you.
I you know, when they first had the battles over minimum wage 100 years ago, they Americans fought over something called liberty of contract, which is a term we never hear anymore, but it was the heart of politics. Liberty of contract was the freedom of every American to make their own decisions and their own deals to determine if they wanted to work for a certain amount or not. And you still had lots of choices. Even back then, you had less choices than you did now in where you could work. But what we've done by raising the minimum wage is if somebody has a service worth $5 an hour, we've made it illegal for them to make a contract and sell their service. So, you know, we see places like inner cities. I'll give you Newark, New Jersey as an example, with worst crime rates in the country. We have a 75-80% unemployment rate amongst teenagers. Now, so I had proposed in New Jersey, like, doing a pilot program of having no minimum wage for young people in the city of Newark, New Jersey, to see if it would create jobs. Of course, the liberal left freaked out over that idea. They said, but maybe we could take these young folks off the streets. Instead of hanging out on street corners unemployed selling drugs, maybe they get a job for $6 an hour sweeping a floor, learning what it is to have a job.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, that would be a great
idea.
Well,
that's, by the way, Walter Williams has also proposed similar ideas. So their solution to the fact that we have stagnant wages for working families is to raise the minimum wage. Well, you know, and that's going to end poverty. I tell you what, let's raise the minimum wage to $25 an hour, and that'll end poverty for good. There'll be no more poverty, right?
Actually, the businesses will, there'll be no more jobs.
I can guarantee you that there'll be at least one company that would fold up. I know of one.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. Oh. One of the consequences.
Yeah, we're at the end of our segment, so we'll have to have you on again. But this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We had Steve Lonergan on the line with us. We'll be back in a moment.
See you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I started our moving business, I couldn't find anyone that would insure us in spite of the fact that I already had insurance on our other business. No one would help us. Then I talked to Tim Hibbing of Fortress Wealth Management. Tim is a young man who grew up in Ames, who went to Iowa State, and has been in the insurance business for nearly 10 years. He's literally licensed for everything, though home, auto, business, and life insurance are his specialties. He has access to more than 25 insurance carriers. So when no one else would help me get my business insured, Tim Hibbing made it happen. Tim is low-key and no pressure. To get a quote, call him or even text him at 515-290-9000. That's 515-290-9000. Call or text Tim Hibbing of Fortress Wealth Management. That's 515-290-9000. Tim Hibbing of Fortress Wealth Management.
Hey, look here, this is Cy Robson, all right? Hey, I just packed my first shoebox for Operation Christmas Child, all right? When we was growing up, we was dirt poor. I wanted to help out with Operation Christmas Child because it has to do with kids, okay? And it brings great joy. I put in some little treats, some toys. With all that, I think the box was full. Oh, by the way, they will not let me send any fireworks.
Go to ShoeboxSci.com to find out how you can share God's love through Operation Christmas Child. That's ShoeboxSci.com.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Recently, my family moved into a new house, and we needed a couple of guys to help us. So I called M&A Moving and Hauling. At the Roloff house, maybe like at your house, moving day can be stressful, so you don't want just anyone handling your personal belongings. If you've ever had your church family help you move, then you know what it's like to work with the team of M&A Moving and Hauling. So next time you need to move, call M&A Moving and Hauling at 515-490-2640. They'll send you a couple of guys. 515-490-2640.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Fortress Wealth Management Insurance Services in Ames. Call Tim Hibbing at 515-290-9000 for all your insurance needs.
Yeah, Tim Hibbing, a new sponsor.
Fortress. We like hearing that.
Yeah, oh,
new
yeah.
sponsors, yes.
Fortress Wealth Management.
So what exactly is wealth management?
Well, his main, I guess, thrust is property and casualty, but Tim can write anything.
Okay.
And I think he's also involved in investments. But the big thing is property and casualty. And he's a great guy. He's done basically all of my insurance, almost all of my insurance, and just does a bang-up job. He was single-handedly the guy that was able to get me insured when I started the moving business. So hats off to Tim. He's a go-getter.
All right. Welcome aboard to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Tim. We appreciate it. On the line, we have a very special guest. She spent, months wrangling different writers, people trying to put... I only know this because I was one of them. trying to get pull different people together to come up with this volume on the Common Core State Standards. And the book title is called Common Ground and Common Core: Voices from Across the Political Spectrum Expose the Realities of the Common Core State Standards. We just like calling it Common Ground for Common Core and leave the subtitle out. But Kirsten Lombard is the editor of that, and she's the founder of Resounding Books. Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, Shane and Brian, it's so great to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I just am so excited to be on your show.
Great. We're glad to have you. So what was the brainchild of doing this? Because this was quite a project, and you had what you had to deal with me getting my essay in. So I can't even imagine, you know, everybody else.
You have a great deal of sympathy already on my part for having to deal with Shane Vanderhart.
It's probably like herding cats, I suppose.
Well, you know, this started, I'm an activist. I've been an activist in the grassroots in Madison, Wisconsin for the last 5 years.
And that's a conservative bastion, Wisconsin, right?
Oh, yes. Well, not exactly. But I'll tell you, Common Core has been on our radar here for the last couple of years or so. We've been watching a lot of the activists on the libertarian / conservative side of the spectrum have been watching what's been coming down the pike in terms of Common Core, where it was embraced early of states like New York and Kentucky. And we started trying to warn our legislators and our governor here. And we thought, you know, we shouldn't have a problem doing that in a state that's got a Republican governor and a Republican-controlled legislature. We thought, you know, we should be able to get this stopped. And, you know, 2 years later, we still haven't been able to pass a single piece of helpful legislation. It looks to us here, those of us who are paying attention to the inside baseball in Wisconsin, it looks to us like we're maybe headed for a rebrand of Common Core, but definitely not a repeal. I mean, it's been really frustrating. And about a year or year and a half ago, a friend of mine here in Wisconsin suggested that, you know, maybe we needed to start talking to some folks on the other side of the aisle and see if we could start to develop some critical mass. And that seemed like a reasonable approach to me. I was a little trepidatious about it, but mm-hmm. I thought, you know, I'm willing to talk to anybody at this point. And he pointed me toward Tim Slucker, who has co-written an essay in the book. Tim is the dean of education at a small, the school of education, I should say, at a small local college here in the Madison area. And Jeff Horn, who has also written an essay, Jeff Horn and I went to have a meeting with Tim and just see what we could, you know, figure between us. And again, we didn't know how this was going to go, but by the end of the meeting, we were absolutely certain it was one of the most important meetings any of us had ever had. And not only did we like each other personally, mm-hmm. But it turned out we had a ton in common in terms of how we thought about education, what we thought it should be, who the real customer for education should be, which is the parent and the child. You know, it was a very productive conversation, and the book sort of slowly grew, I think, in my mind, out of that conversation.
Great. So who are some of the essay writers beyond myself?
Wow, we've got just a ton of great people. There are some very, very well-known names that everybody will be familiar with, people like Sandra Stotsky, who has done just yeoman's work on solid standards, you know, what that means, and developing standards. Jim Milgram, who is just an incredibly decorated mathematician, co-wrote an essay with Zev Werman, who reviewed the standards for the state of California. They wrote on the mathematics standards. You have people like Seresta Smith down in Florida, who's an educator and an activist down there, who has written on what this does to people of color, what Common Core does to the minority community. People like Morna McDermott, who is somebody who identifies as a radical leftist and teaches at a college out in Maryland. Has written a powerhouse essay on the model legislation coming out of the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is an organization that many of us on the quote-unquote right have thought of as very conservative. But really what it's doing is it's putting legislators, state legislators, and big business in the same room to develop legislation and port that back to the states for passage. And some of those model bills that are related to Common Core are facilitating data mining and also direct marketing to children in the classroom. I mean, I can. There's a ton of good people in this book.
Which, as a conservative, we need to point out is not a conservative value.
That's exactly right.
Kirsten, one of the things that occurred to me in talking about this political right, left, center together to stop Common Core, anybody, regardless of their political leanings, who's got a child that's struggling with Common Core math, this ought to be a no-brainer. I mean, I've got anecdotal evidence anyway with people I know, including my grandkids. Some of my grandkids who have just been struggling with this, and my daughter-in-law in particular is just, you know, her head is spinning trying to figure out how to do these problems. And it just seems to me that this ought not to be that difficult a sell to folks who are even on the left politically, that this is a bad idea. What are your thoughts there, specifically with regard to math?
Absolutely. No, I think that we're definitely seeing people on both sides of the spectrum reacting against what's going on with mathematics. I think when you start digging even deeper and what's underneath that, why are we making math so difficult for children?
Right.
You have further agreement between, you know, right, middle, and left on this. You know, what are we doing that we are making it so that children can't learn effectively or easily? Why are we destroying the learning process for children and making it something they don't want to do? And frankly, why are we making it so that, you know, they come out essentially crippled on the other side of the quote-unquote educational process? None of this should be happening. I don't know a single parent who wants their children dumbed down, who wants their child crippled, intellectually or academically. I don't know a single parent who wants their child career tracked so that, you know, somebody's deciding their future for them, what opportunities they will have well in advance of that child having enough maturity to decide for themselves what they would want to do with their life. All of these things are horrendous, and all of them are part of the Common Core. And yet, you're right. There is no parent, I don't care, right, middle, left, who wants these things happening.
Right. Yeah. One thing I discovered, again, some anecdotal evidence. I was talking with a new friend, and actually, she was asking me what I did, and I said, you know, I like to say I Facebook, tweet, and blog for a living as part of 415 Communications.
In his basement.
In my basement.
Usually in his pajamas.
But I own the basement at least. So, and I mentioned I write a lot about Common Core. It's like, what's Common Core? And I said, well, it's educational standards. It's basically our math. In Iowa, it's our math and our English language arts standards. Oh, I hate the math. And suddenly she automatically knew what I was talking about.
Right.
So it's like, I found that amazing. And she's not necessarily with me politically. I'm like, aha, yeah. So that's definitely something. It's something that can bring, you know, all sides together.
If parents have experienced this, they know
exactly. And one thing I find, you know, with polls that are starting to come out is that there are more and more teachers that are starting to speak out against Common Core and be against Common Core. And it's happening as it's being implemented, because suddenly they're seeing, hey, we're getting past the talking points. We're actually experiencing this in the classroom.
Absolutely.
So I think we're going to have growing opposition. So what are some things that you took away from this project, things that you learned that maybe you didn't know before?
Well, one thing that became very clear to me is that public-private partnership is really at the core of Common Core. And what I mean by that is that big government and big business are holding hands. You know, we've had, and I think this is a point of agreement too, or a way to bridge the political spectrum on this issue, is that there's been this sort of interesting specialization of concerns along the political spectrum for years, where people who identify on the left scream about big business and evil corporations, and people on the quote-unquote right, you know, talk about the intrusiveness of government and, you know, the overreach of government. And, you know, gee, what if we were all right? And it turns out on this issue we actually are, because business and government are holding hands to get this done and shove this down our throats. And I think, you know, really looking at that, at that that bridge was a huge revelation to me, and I could begin to see where, boy, if we start talking to each other and we leverage that specialization of concerns and we start to talk to each other about what we all know and, you know, link that information up, there is no way that they can stop us.
Absolutely.
You mean you don't appreciate having something jammed down your throat?
I don't understand that. I just, yeah.
We're getting used to it since 2008 in particular.
Oh, man. Well, you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and we have Kirsten Lombard, who's the editor of Common Ground on Common Core. What are some of the, beyond the public-private partnerships, content-wise, was there anything in some of the other essays that you learned that's like, wow, this is eye-opening, or something? What are some, I guess, major points you think our readers would be interested in?
Well, one of them,
our listeners, I guess I should say.
yeah. Well, one of them was the one listener or the one. Sorry.
Hey, my tens of listeners will be. No, right.
We're all three of them are deeply offended.
Yes.
No, I know you've got a ton of listeners. I was just talking about like the many things that I learned out of this, or the things that were surprising to me. I think two of the most fascinating to me were Morna McDermott's essay and Seresta Smith's essay, two of the big lies that we've been fed about Common Core is that, it is a free market reform, and B, that it's going to be great for minorities, that it's going to really help underserved, underprivileged kids to get ahead. And those two women, Morna McDermott on the free enterprise side, she just decimates the idea that this is free enterprise. She looks at the model legislation coming out of the American Legislative Exchange Council and just makes it clear this is not free enterprise. This is essentially command economy. This is, again, public-private partnership, making deals and leveraging the political system to get what it wants, and government coming along for the ride because, gee, it gets things that it wants out of this, too. That was just a really a powerhouse essay, in my opinion. And then also Seresta Smith just decimating this idea that somehow this is going to be good for minorities. She just lays out a very clear case as to how this is not only not good for minorities, but it is essentially the direct descendant of every failed reform of the last 30 years, which has already been bad for minorities.
Great.
You know? So huge.
Yeah, that is huge. Where can people buy the book?
They can go straight to the publishing website, the Resounding Books website. That's resoundingbooks.org, and they can order it from there. We would be delighted to have them do that.
Great. And if you are an activist, this is a great resource to have.
Yes.
To give to a legislator even. It's $25, but hey, it's a great investment. So I encourage you to go to resoundingbooks.com and and purchase that book. This
dot
is
org.
Dot org. Dot org. ResoundingBooks.org. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website, conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint, without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Recently, my family moved into a new house, and we needed a couple of guys to help us. So I called M&A Moving and Hauling. At the Roloff house, maybe like at your house, moving day can be stressful, so you don't want just anyone handling your personal belongings. If you've ever had your church family help you move, then you know what it's like to work with the team of M&A Moving and Hauling. So next time you need to move, call M&A Moving and Hauling at 515-490-2640. They'll send you a couple of guys. 515-490-2640.
Hi, this is Nelly Chikwanda from Zambia, Africa. I have been involved in Operation Christmas Child for over 10 years, and I never get tired of seeing our children in Zambia receive your shoebox gifts. Packing a shoebox is simple, and in the hands of God, it becomes a powerful tool. Thank you, and please keep packing these beautiful shoebox gifts.
Visit SamaritansPurse.org or call 800-809-3882.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers, and we have come to our segment in our program where it's news that you can use.
Hopefully you can use.
Prayerfully that you can use. Please listen, and maybe you can apply it to your life. No, we just like to cover different topics of the week, and there's been a lot of noise being made about Obamacare, in particular a gentleman named Gruber.
That's here somewhere.
Jonathan Gruber,
yeah.
Yes. National Journal has an article out. I love the title, Obamacare's Foundation of Lies.
It's true. It is. And the frustrating thing for me is, you know, you go on the web and you look at the comments section on different, on Facebook or comments on different blog posts, and there's people out there that just don't care. It's like, okay, so what? We got sold a bill of goods. They lied to us. That's irrelevant. We got Obamacare.
Mm.
You just don't like it because Obama passed it, and you don't like Obama. And you're probably a racist anyway, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
To me, this ought to be something that people are really concerned about, that we have had an administration sell us this monumental, because this is a monumental federal program. Monumental.
Yes.
Huge in every respect. And it got not only jammed down our throats politically, but the whole thing was based on a series of lies. It's very cynical, too, when you've got these guys who say, well, yeah, we knew these guys didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. We knew that we could kind of hide things behind the curtain, and it worked for us.
Exactly.
And nobody cares.
Yeah. And they're relying upon the stupidity of the American voter. As much as I'd like to disagree with that statement, considering, and I don't want to, I'm not poking fun at people, but we have got a ton of low-information voters.
No, we have a big problem there.
I was talking with a guy who ran for office, county office, and he was telling me how, yeah, I know this is true, but, you know, Democrats, when it comes to early voting, they're training their people, vote one dot. You just need to put one dot. You need to just straight ticket Democrat, and they'll go in these senior centers and get them to register them to vote or early voting. Here, one dot. Don't need to worry about the rest. Where, this guy was telling me that, hey, yeah, I had somebody say, well, I voted for Romney. Doesn't that mean I voted for you? No, you need to flip the ballot over and vote for me unless you vote straight ticket. Republicans don't typically vote straight ticket. I'm not saying people should start. I think it's great to vote for the person and not the party. And I'm sure being on the Central Committee of the Polk County Republicans, they would probably disagree with me vehemently about that. But anyway, it's something that, you know, we tend to encourage people to vet out voters and get to know them more. But it's hard to combat this.
Well, yeah. And look, and again, I'm not hammering on a particular group of people. But since you mentioned, you know, senior citizens, it seems to me like they're a very vulnerable group.
Oh, absolutely.
To a lot of things.
Yeah, and so I want to make it clear, I'm not calling senior citizens stupid. I can just see somebody saying that, twisting my words. Yeah.
But you can scare them. You can come in and say, if these Republicans win,
they're going to take away your Social Security.
Yep. And you're going
to take away your Medicare.
And you're going to be living on dog food.
I get those two confused.
Medicare.
And
you're going to be living on dog food, and we're going to throw babies in the snow, and you've got to vote Democrat to stop them. And these folks are vulnerable to that message.
Absolutely.
And you and I have talked about this before. You know, they do these post-election interviews with people and ask them a series of questions, and it becomes very evident that these folks know precious little about what actually the issues are or what got said during the course of the campaign, but they show up to vote.
Yeah. But when it comes to the whole Obamacare thing, too, I mean, gosh, there was a group. Well, you know, we have Nancy Pelosi. We'll know what's in the bill when we pass the bill. By the way, Nancy Pelosi is trying to say, I don't know who Jonathan Gruber is, even though she, you know, actually cited some of his work by name just, a couple of years ago. But now suddenly, yeah, I don't know who he is.
And what was it Krauthammer said? If you're going to lie, try to do it, you know, with something out that hasn't been videotaped.
Exactly. I mean, holy cow. But that would mean that Nancy Pelosi actually is smart. And that's not something I would accuse Nancy Pelosi of being.
Well, none of this should surprise us, but yeah, lack of transparency and stupid voters. That's the message that's coming out of Jonathan Gruber, and like I say, it shouldn't surprise us. Next topic, internet neutrality.
Oh!
You like that one?
Oh, gosh. Anybody who blogs should hate this.
Well, you know,
we want the federal government regulating the internet?
Well, that's my concern. I you know, Eric Goranson, who's, you know, one of our contributors at Caffeinated Thoughts and a friend of ours, he makes a great point. It irritates him to death to have to pay, you know, his money to his ISP, and those guys then determine whether or not he's going to get certain performance.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm paying for that performance. You know, I don't want those guys making the decision on whether I get that level of performance. So he wants to see either FCC rules or some sort of legislation to put a stop to that. My problem is just what you mentioned, is if we invite the federal government, whether it's the FCC or whether it's legislation,
yeah,
doesn't really matter. If we invite the government into regulating the internet, it'll be over.
Remember the fairness doctrine.
You'll never be able to stop them. Once the camel gets the nose in the tent, it's over.
For years, radio was under the fairness doctrine. Can you imagine the internet being under the fairness doctrine? I mean, it's going to get beyond just...
Bye-bye caffeinated thoughts.
Yeah, well, we're small potatoes. I think Drudge Report has more to worry about than we do, but, you know...
Oh, they'd catch us in the web, buddy.
Oh, eventually, probably, yeah. So it's just not a good idea. We don't need the feds involved in this. So then also, another piece of joyful news. President Obama has a pen and a phone, you know. And a source close to Obama says he's going to announce a 10-point immigration plan via executive action as early as next week. And some of those things will be...
Well, you know, I don't have that in front of me. Forgive me.
I don't have his 10-point plan.
You're going to have to find that, buddy. But
here's the long and the short of it. We only have 2 minutes left. Basically, he could end up allowing upwards to 4.5 million illegal immigrant adults with U.S.-born children to stay.
via executive action. He's basically the 10 initiatives. They span from everything from boosting border security to improving pay for immigration officers. I'm not against, obviously, yes, boost border security,
right,
and improve pay for immigration officers.
Which he could have and should have done a long time ago.
Yeah, there was already federal law in the book saying we're going to secure our border. It's just a matter of making it a priority and actually doing it.
Right.
But the most controversial pertains to the millions who could get deportation reprieve under what is known as deferred action. So basically, the plan calls for expanding deferred action for illegal immigrants who came to the U.S. as children, but also for parents of U.S. citizens and legal permanent residents.
Now, setting off a bomb post-election that he knows, I mean, that he knows is going to create havoc. There's going to be guys out there. Ted Cruz is going to be talking impeachment. This is going to get really ugly really fast, and all the warm fuzzies that some of these guys have been having about working together will be over.
Oh, there's going to be no working together. He's a president. He's a president who can't do that. He's not a Bill Clinton. He doesn't know how to negotiate. He doesn't know how to talk to the other side.
Yeah, you're not going to see a pivot now. It isn't going to happen.
No.
It's not in this guy's DNA.
No, so anyway, you know, just this is amnesty via executive action is not what this country needs. We need a secure border, and we need to honor the rule of law. This is Shane Van Hart with Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Recently, my family moved into a new house, and we needed a couple of guys to help us. So I called M&A Moving and Hauling. At the Roloff house, maybe like at your house, moving day can be stressful, so you don't want just anyone handling your personal belongings. If you've ever had your church family help you move, then you know what it's like to work with the team of M&A Moving and Hauling. So next time you need to move, call M&A Moving and Hauling at 515-490-2640. They'll send you a couple of guys. 515-490-2640.
How much joy can fit in a shoebox? More than you think. That's because you can pack a shoebox with toys, school supplies, and hygiene items for a little boy or girl in need. Your simple shoebox gift may be the only gift that child ever receives. Accept the challenge. Get involved this year with Operation Christmas Child and change a child's life forever by showing them the love of Jesus. For more information, visit SamaritansPurse.org. That's SamaritansPurse.org.
Welcome back, Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by M&A Moving and Hauling, serving all of Central Iowa for your moving needs. Call 515-490-2640, and they'll send you a couple of guys. President Obama talks climate change with the Chinese.
Yippee!
Just think about that for a second. Do you really think China, you know, who just now started, they got a bolstering economy, which China's just so complex. I mean, here you have this communist nation, but yet they love capitalism too. It's kind of weird. It's a weird marriage. A lot of crony capitalism, I'm sure, but now he's trying to convince them to work against their own economic interests.
Yeah, and good luck with that.
Climate change.
Those guys are going to be over there, you know, saying, "Oh yeah, Mr. President, we'll be happy to sign this agreement." They're not going to do this. They're building coal-fired power plants at the rate of 1 to 2 per week.
And here's
they are not going to stop.
Here's the thing, President Obama. He's like, you know, the Republicans are saying they wasted no time in criticizing. This is Reuters. Yeah. Excuse me.
Reuters.
Reuters. Anyway, they wrote, Republicans wasted no time in criticizing what they called President Barack Obama's one-sided climate deal with China, using the announcement to declare war on the administration's plan to use executive actions. There's that phone and a pen again to combat carbon emissions. In brokering a high-profile pact with China, the Obama administration knew it would preempt one of the most often cited arguments Republicans have used to argue against mandatory domestic carbon cuts. China will continue to pollute unabated.
Yeah, you got the Chinese, the Russians, and the Indians that are going to continue to crank out all kinds of carbon of one sort or another.
So yeah,
and they're not going to stop.
No.
So why in the world would we implement something that would strangle our economy?
Yeah. Well, because we like hamstringing ourselves. It's fun. You know, our economy can beat your economy with one arm tied behind our back.
A friend of mine on Facebook had a classic quote the other day. He said, China wants to cripple our economy, but it'll be easier for them if we just do it ourselves.
Yes, yes. You know what? We don't want you to waste resources. We'll just go ahead and do it for you.
Oh, man.
Because, we're good like that. So it's insane.
Well, this really is insane, because we are going to do something. Okay, let's just say for the moment that all of this business with CO2 in particular and carbon in general,
which is plant food, by the way,
is really true. Let's just say it's true. What would be the point in us, you know, crippling our economy in an attempt to stop it when we know that Russia, China, and India are not going to? In other words, even if everything that they're selling to us with regard to climate change being man-made, this is not going to do any good. So, in other words, why commit suicide?
Well, because Brian, we are evil Americans, and thereby we are the most, you know, we are the biggest polluter, and we take up all the resources, and we have to, you know, hurt ourselves in penance for our past sins. That's why.
Well, that's probably the way they think.
Yeah, well, I know. I don't get it
myself. But this really is beautiful. We are going to economically commit suicide in an attempt to stop a problem that doesn't exist. And even if it does exist, we can't stop it anyway because of the Russians, the Chinese, and the Indians. I have no idea why we keep pursuing this stupid, because that's what it is, stupid policy. It is going to fail. There is no way that it can do anything but fail.
And that's like, you know, the hashtag that goes behind every Obama tweet, fail.
Okay, our quote of the day is from Francis Schaeffer. Tell me what the world is saying, and I'll tell you what the church will be saying in 7 years. Sad but true.
Oh, yes. I'd say amen to that, but... Ugh. This is Caffeinate Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.